Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change it, point it, tune it, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, gem and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it, date it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it.
Good afternoon and welcome to Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we look into everything that has a button that lights up when you push it.
Ding.
Ding. It is ding. Consumer electronics. It is gadgets. It is technology. I am Avi Miller. Joining me in the studios are the two ladies, all the ladies.
Hello.
Hello, ladies.
Hello there. Hello.
Oh. I have quite a view. This is quite good.
I pity you wouldn't appreciate it more though, Avi. I mean, really.
I appreciate geeks across the table from me of whatever gender.
Excellent.
It is Technogaze. We have a whole bunch of things for you this afternoon. We're going to start off, as we always do, with some news. We have news.
Do we?
After that, because we have the two ladies, we have Donna, who is otherwise known as Little Miss Drupal. We have Raina, who is the chick who wrote the book on WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that I would get their opinions on Drupal and WordPress for hosting your own blog or your small business website or your personal site and that kind of stuff. So we're going to talk a little bit about web software, and I'm actually going to delve into the history a bit of Donna and Raina and their bona fides, as
Ooh.
One might say.
Raina, delving into our history.
Indeed.
Is the world ready?
Do you think it'll feel good?
We also have a discussion of a new gay and lesbian tech organization or tech group that started up in the UK. Raina and I will give you our live feedback from the PAX Penny Arcade Expo. We're going to be talking global roaming. That's always a good one for us geeks who travel around the world with our very well connected smartphones or dumb,
that's right.
Well, dumb phones once I get overseas usually, but it should be a smartphone. And we're bringing back App of the Week. Raina and I have been playing with a particular app on our smartphone.
And it's great fun.
And it's great fun, so we'll be talking about that as well. So all things tech, all things good. So should we start with the news, ladies?
Yes, please. Let's start with the news.
Big news this week, and I'm surprised that we didn't hear about this. Edward Snowden has been granted asylum in Russia.
But just for 1 year, isn't that right?
Just for 1 year.
Short-term asylum. I mean, how does that work? He has to, like, spend the year finding somewhere else to go, or will he get an extension? How does this kind of happen?
It is one of those. I think they just want to get him out of the airport, quite frankly.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, it must be. I mean, there was a story years and years ago about some French guy who basically ended up living in the Paris airport because he had nowhere to go. And I guess that was the future that Edward Snowden was kind of gazing down. He really was in a, like, rock and a hard place kind of situation, though, because he couldn't get to where he was offered asylum and he couldn't leave the airport. So, you know, what were his options?
So now, a little bit of background for those of you who are listening who may not be aware of who the lovely Edward Snowden is. He is the whistleblower. He worked for the NSA in the United States, and he is the guy that sent the NSA's PRISM documentation and other documentation, because more stuff has come out this week.
Mm.
And he's the one who sent it to the New York Times, from memory.
And the thing about this Russian asylum is apparently Vladimir Putin said, you can stay so long as you cease to whistleblow on the stuff that you know. And that was kind of the original condition. So I guess that's been, you know, that's been made. But he's quite stuck. I mean, you've kind of got US Senator Robert Menendez sort of saying Edward Snowden is a fugitive who belongs in a United States courtroom and not a free man deserving of asylum in Russia. Now, given that all Edward Snowden has done is release information, and we've also just had the Bradley Manning verdict come out, that this he really is in jeopardy if he goes back to the US.
Though it's kind of interesting, because if Bradley Manning had managed to get away, he would not be welcome in Russia, given that he is thought to be gender questioning and sexuality questioning.
Right.
Of course, the Russians don't take too kindly to that these days.
No, which is awkward.
Yes. So, look, Edward Snowden, I'm not sure that a year in Russia is something that I'd want, but I applaud him for standing up for what he believes was correct.
But, Raina, didn't you find some evidence that he'd had an interesting job offer?
A job offer, that's right. So
in Russia?
So another bit of news is that he has been offered some work by VKontakt, which probably is pronounced differently in Russian, but I don't speak any of it.
VKontakt.
The Russians. Sorry.
Russians just sound sexier. I mean, this is fantastic. Anything in Russian sounds good.
The gentleman in charge of that, anyway, has made an offer to him and said, look, you know, why don't you come to St. Petersburg and come and work for us with all our great developers? So maybe...
This is like the Russian Facebook or something.
Yes. It is. No, well, that's exactly what it's like. And former Soviet republics is quite popular there as well. You could probably use it in English if you wanted, but I don't have any friends over there to
Think his refugee visa allows him to work? Like, I mean, you know, these are one of these things that I, immigrant to Australia, for example, it was one of those interesting questions. Does my visa allow me to work? Do you think his...
Could he maybe apply for a different visa as a skilled migrant or something, though? That's
correct. I mean, he's on an asylum seeker visa, one imagines. Mm.
And I saw one news report sort of talking about, well, maybe one of his options is to find himself a nice Rusky bride and get another visa that means he can stay.
You mean a reverse mail order? Yeah. He's a mail order guru.
Or a mail order hacker.
That's fantastic.
Oh, hello. there's a website for that. Hang on, I'm married.
But maybe you can put your husband on it.
Oh, ooh. No, shh.
Anyway,
he might be listening.
Let's come back closer to home, shall we? The Australian government has released its report into the IT price fixing.
And to one's surprise, they found that prices were really high here.
Prices are high, and the reason was just like, well, you know, because they can.
Absolutely.
Just they can get away with it, so they do. That's the only real reason. Everything else was bogus.
Now, this is quite a long report. I don't know if you guys have looked at the actual report, but it's hundreds of pages.
I haven't.
Surprisingly, I haven't got all the way through it.
No, it's a bit dense. But they've made 10 recommendations, and most of them are... for want of a bit of praise, sort of recommendations.
Yeah.
They're kind of commonsensical.
One of them was, you know, we're being mistreated by these organisations, so get around the geo-blocking.
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of ruled out or kind of made pseudo-illegal by the Free Trade Agreement, which said, you know, you must not circumvent technological protection measures.
It is one of those... But you know, and the flip side is that we have our own ABC, the ABC, for example, who has geo-blocking on iView, for example.
So and which they periodically lift when there's,
when there's something
going on.
Happening.
Yeah.
And all the, expats might want to watch it.
Yeah.
And we should say that these are just recommendations. You know, there's as much as we go, as a community go, yeah, those are tremendous. Let's have them now.
Recommendations like serving suggestions only.
It's a recommendation that the government investigate the feasibility of these things as distinct from actually do it. So they're actually recommending to ban geo-blocking as a term of doing business in Australia.
Is that kind of like they removed the restrictions on, you know, DVDs and stuff? Like we used to... machines used to be restricted to...
Yeah, they used to be region locked.
That's the word.
And
I'm
now you can't sell a region locked DVD player. But you can still sell region locked DVDs.
Yes.
But the machines have to be able to unencrypt them, right?
Yeah. So we have more news coming up. You are on TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze.
You are on TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, and you should be listening to us on your smartphone app because that's the technological way to do it. If you want to get if you want to get in touch with the program, if you have something to share, email us onair@joy.org.au, SMS us 0427JOY949, tweet us at TechnoGaze, that's GAZE, or look up our Facebooky page as well. You can also find our blog at joy.org.au/TechnoGaze for all of your podcasty goodness.
Mm-mm.
Now, from all sorts of very serious asylum-y IT price-fixing things to games.
Hoorah.
This week saw the largest online space battle in history.
Can we just nerd alert for a minute there? Just switch on the magic light. This is EVE Online.
This is EVE Online.
So the biggest space battle in history, in fictional game history, absolutely. Yes.
Well, I you know,
hang on. I thought you were, like, talking about real spaceships.
As far as we know, we haven't been in a real space battle, but EVE Online is what... It's not a morgue because it's not role-playing. It's a massively multiplayer online resource game. I mean,
I suppose, yeah. And, you know, running around having markets and... In ships,
essentially,
and
being
parts of corporations.
Yeah, you buy and sell spaceships. You go out and you mine asteroids and mine planets, and you build bigger spaceships, and you create forms of corporations. If there are EVE Online players out there who are rolling their eyes at us, getting all of this wrong, please do email and correct us on air at joy.org.au. But the BBC, I love the fact that this story was so big that the BBC reported this one. Over 4,000 players were involved in the largest online battle in EVE Online's history. The EVE Online system actually had to slow down their time inside the game to 10% of normal to cope with the amount of players that were in one section of space in EVE Online.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting about this is EVE Online was one of the first massively multiplayer online games where in-game items had real world currency values.
That's right. So you can kind of like mine for resources, as it were, in the game, but, you know, most people are actually spending money on it.
Yes.
Now, you know, there was a battle that was like this some months ago.
Yeah.
Internet years. It was quite smaller, and that alone just managed to cost the community $15,000. Now, yep. In this report from the BBC, they hadn't yet figured out how much it was going to cost, but I read something that suggested it was close to $35,000.
Yeah, and this is $35,000 worth
of I don't know
in-game.
How true that is, but nuts. That's real money we're talking about there. And they're gone. That's the other thing about this game. You don't come back. You don't come back from
there's no save and restore.
If your ship's been blown up by somebody else, that's it. You have to get yourself another ship.
You have to go out and buy one. So if there were any, I'm curious to know if there were any EVE Online Australian players who may be listening who were involved in the battle, who can tell us about it. So
SMS us. Dying to hear about it.
0427 joy 949, or tweet us or email us on air at joy.org.au. Still with gaming, however, let's go to Nintendo.
Mm.
They're not having a great time at the moment. So
not so much. So sales apparently of the Wii U are down 51% in the last 3 months. Imagine that.
And the Wii, 51. The original Wii, is actually outselling the Wii U.
That's right.
How can that? I mean, you know, the Wii U was released when?
A couple of months ago.
Beginning,
sort of beginning of this year ish.
And they're still selling the original Wii.
They're still selling the original Wii,
which
because
was released when? But it's been upgraded since its first release, right?
It's still as is.
Yeah.
Wow.
My understanding, though, is that Wii U can't play Wii games.
So there's not as much material as on a traditional
Wii. Not as much
out of
the Wii ecosystem.
Yet.
That's right.
And they haven't released. You know, the games consoles. This is now the season for the next generation of console. We've got the Xbox One coming out soon. We've got PlayStation 4. Yeah, I can't remember. I'm not a PlayStation person. PlayStation number. Coming out, the Wii U was the first of the next generation consoles to be released. But Nintendo, interestingly, didn't release it with a big box title. You know, they're still waiting for the Mario Kart or the Sonic or the whatever the big, you know.
And they've got things like, I mean, they've got some AAA titles like Assassin's Creed 3, and I think there's, I don't know if it's even been released. You can tell how much I don't care about the Wii U, right?
You and 51% of Wii U
apparently,
sales.
Apparently. So there's stuff like that coming out, but a lot of them are releases of late things. So there's like a re-release of Deus Ex Human Revolution, which came out a couple of years ago, is now out on the Wii U. And it's like, well, that's exciting, I suppose. Now, the thing that's pretty worrying about the Wii U sales is that there are already some chains and things that are dropping them off. So in the article that we read, Nintendo's Wii U was actually being dropped off the shelves at Asda, which is a big chain in the UK.
Yes.
So that's a little bit of a worry if that's an ongoing trend.
Oh.
They even dumped the price by £100, which at our exchange rate is about
What, $1.5 million?
Yeah, but yeah.
$1 million Pacific pesos. No, and rising.
I'm so used to doing the conversion into rands, which is fantastic.
Oh, it sounds amazing,
when you go back
where.
Now, moving across, we were just mentioning the UK, moving across to the UK, a new gay and lesbian organisation called Intertech has formed. Donna,
this is very, very cool. A bunch of big tech organisations in the UK, like your Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Dell, Nokia, BAE, which is British Aerospace, Accenture, Avanade, Ertl Design, which I've never heard of, made by many, Clarity PR and Stonewall, have apparently founded together or brought their internal gay and lesbian groups together to form Intertech, which is a new group for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, etc., etc., etc.
Quilt bag communities.
Quilt bag communities into this one organisation for the tech industry. It is only in the UK at this point, which raises the question, though, you know, what about the rest of us? You know, there have been these kinds of organisations have existed inside large tech companies for some time, but this kind of bringing it out and sharing it, you know, I don't know.
You know, tech companies historically have been really, for the most of the big tech companies have been very pro gay and lesbian rights for a long time. We know that, you know, Microsoft in Seattle, for example, has spearheaded marriage equality in the northwestern states of America. Facebook is famously pro gay and lesbian rights,
and a bunch of them got on the bandwagon of the
It Gets Better campaign. I know my own very large corporate organization, whom I don't represent, so I won't mention their names, but they also have an It Gets Better, you know, campaign video. And we have a huge gay and lesbian internal organization within the company that is international, you know.
So, you know, from your perspective, Avi, you know, what do these kinds of groups do for you as, you know, a gay geek in the tech industry? Like, how does it help?
You know, for me, I think one of the big things is that I always liken this to before I joined this company, which is one of the largest software and hardware companies in the world. You can make your own guesses as to who it is. I've always worked for small, tiny open source development companies. So being gay in a small, tiny company was easy because there were only eight of us, you know, and I was 1/8 of the company. When you're in a company of 120,000, 130,000 people, diversity is much broader, but it becomes more difficult to have a voice.
Yeah.
What I find remarkable...
And diversity count, you know, is all sorts of things, not just sexuality.
You know, and what I find...
Geographically spread as well. It's hard to sort of be friends with all the other gays in the village, isn't
it? And what I find remarkable, for example, is that we fly during Pride Week in San Diego and San Francisco. Our campuses in those locations actually fly the gay pride flag. We have galleries of pictures of the gay pride flag flying at our various campuses, as do most of the IT companies that I know of. What this does, I think, is as a networking group across companies, is it gives networking capability to it's kind of like Fruits and Suits here in Melbourne, or the Globe initiative here in Melbourne. So we have sort of I hate to use the word generic, but we have professional networking groups here in Melbourne. They have in Sydney as well. So we've got Globe, Lemons with a Twist, Fruits and Suits, which are all
those names are hilarious.
They are fantastic, and they're fantastic organizations for professional gays and lesbians and bisexuals and transgender and those kind of people to network. I find it fascinating that the IT industry is doing this as a specific IT thing.
And so this has been going on in, you know, the banking, legal, insurance, media sectors have had these kind of organisations for a while. Why do you think it's taken so long for the tech sector to branch out?
Because I suspect competitiveness. In the sense that IT company, you know, one of the things that I get working for a large corporate is that we are a number one, and everybody else are the enemy, and we will crush them in a soul. You know, I mean,
or buy them.
Or buy them, indeed. Acquire or destroy. You will be assimilated. Your uniqueness will
be added to our
collective.
Own.
But it's that sort of thing. I think it's great that we have companies that are able to put that competitiveness aside. But if you look at the list of those companies,
do you think it's also though that it actually hasn't been that much of an issue inside tech companies because they've generally been more progressive types of organisations. I mean, you've kind of got, you know, this Andrew McAlpine, co-chairman of Intertex, was saying, look, you know, being gay at Google is a non-issue because you are given the freedom to be yourself. So that kind of individuality, expression, ability to express yourself has always just sort of been normal.
Yeah, and I think, I certainly think watching the It Gets Better videos made by the big tech companies and the big media companies, you know, Pixar probably did the one that I cried the most at, because the Pixar video, of course, is animated by Pixar.
Yeah.
If Pixar can make anybody cry, there is that almost a celebration of diversity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I find that fantastic.
It is. I think this is just a really fantastic development. Look, if you're interested in finding out more about Intertech, you can visit the website, which is intertechlgbt.com.
And on that note, I think it is a perfect time to go to some sponsorship messages. You are on TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze.
Joy.org.au.
It is 28 minutes past 12 here on Joy 94.9. You are with the lovely ladies Donna and Raina and Avi here on TechnoGaze, where we gaze into the world of technology, consumer electronics, gadgets, and buttons that light up when you push them.
Ding!
That was totally not rehearsed, but I think we should do that all the time now. That's fantastic.
We'll have to harmonise better next time.
Yes.
Ding, ding.
It's the machine that goes ping, ladies and gentlemen. Now, ladies, considering we have Donna, you are affectionately known as Little Miss Drupal.
By some.
Are you still on the Drupal board?
Yes, I am a member of the Drupal Association board.
Fantastic. We have Raina, who when I said, you know, I'm quite good at WordPress, she pointed out to me, I literally wrote the book on WordPress.
Twice.
So Raina has written two books and I have been schooled.
Accomplished author Raina Armitage.
Whoop-de-doo. Of course it was co-authored. Come on.
Yes.
But yes, WordPress.
So now obviously for those of you who are familiar listeners to TechnoGaze know that I am the online development manager here at Joy 94.9, and our new Joy website runs WordPress as well.
Which is awesome.
Which I thought, so considering I had subject matter experts, for want of a better term, I thought we would discuss the use of things like Drupal and WordPress.
Because we have a house full of web developers today.
We have a house full of web developers. And, of course, what prompted this is that WordPress has just had a shiny new release.
It has.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that, Raina?
Well, okay. So WordPress is now at version 3.6.
Hang on. Let's go back. For some people may not know what WordPress is.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Tell us what WordPress is.
Okay, so WordPress is a software package that sort of started out as a blogging thing, but you can actually use it to do lots of interesting, complicated websites really, really easily. So you don't have to know anything particularly difficult or anything particularly complicated in a technical sense to start producing really awesome things on a website.
If you want to blog, get yourself some WordPress and put your words on the web.
Then press them into the web.
Press them in. Press your words into the web.
Press them on. Now, it's been going for about 10 years, so it's a pretty exciting project. It's open source. It's all those good things. And of course, as Avi pointed out, it does drive the Joy website. So
it does,
even
yes.
If you are not necessarily after a blog, but you do want a very large thing that contains lots
what
and lots of podcasts and things, you can do that too.
What are some of the other websites that people might be familiar with that are running on WordPress?
Well, there may not be sites that people are familiar with themselves, but there are certainly some businesses and organisations that you've probably heard about. So so the Australian Ballet, for example, their website runs on WordPress, which is pretty cool. Mark Webber, the F1 racing driver. So I don't know.
I do like a nice Webber.
Indeed.
I'm a big supporter of Mr. Webber and his endeavours.
There you go. Well, you can support him on his WordPress-powered website if that's what you're interested in. Bill Cosby. Can we get a big A-plus for Bill Cosby? Usain Bolt, the Rolling Stones, plenty of celebrity websites run on that. I don't know if any of you guys read Variety at all for your movie news.
I do sometimes.
You do sometimes?
When I'm stuck in LA and I think I need an acting job, I do check out the Variety classifieds because, you know.
That's
so
right.
The thing is, like, WordPress is massively, massively popular.
It's enormous.
Runs a huge percentage of all of the world's websites.
They reckon now 18% of the web runs on WordPress.
That's almost one in five. five websites.
That's
ever,
huge. Anyway. And of course, WordPress.com is a big like aggregation of websites running WordPress.
Yes.
And lots of people can just, you know, head there and start a blog and for free. Right?
We're going to talk about that in a second. I wanted to say, Raina, give us a bit of background on Drupal.
Donna.
That would be Donna.
Donna. Yes, Donna.
Hi.
Listeners, sorry,
you can't see that he's pointing at Donna.
No.
I was pointing at Donna.
Pointing at Donna and saying, Raina, because we have become one.
Yes.
No. So Drupal, Drupal and WordPress are actually very similar in some ways. They run the same, what we call stack, you know. Mm-hmm. We used to call it the LAMP stack. It's kind of varied a little bit from there, but you
There's still a PERT at the end, usually.
There's still a PERT at the end, and you can vary the kind of the operating system.
So that's PHP, by the way.
Yes.
So it was Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, but you can use any operating system. You can use any web server. You can use any database. Well, any
not
anything.
For WordPress. Interestingly enough,
oh no, you
no
can't.
WordPress no. is still specific to MySQL or MariaDB or Percona or one of the MySQL flavors. But it doesn't.
You can't just throw it at anything.
No,
no. Okay, so that's one of the differences then, because Drupal has. Abstracted its database layer, so you can run it on PostgreSQL. You can also run it on MongoDB. So it really has sort of taken a level up there. And depending on what your stack is, you can probably still run Drupal.
Now, just for the benefit of anyone who is listening and finds that maybe it's a little bit too much beep boop, beep boop. What's the short answer for that? Basically, is that you can just run it on a lot of ecosystems, right?
You can run it on a lot of different kinds of in a lot of different places. And you know, if you've got access to a web server or a cloud host, you can probably run Drupal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Raina listed some of the big ticket, well, the big hosts or the big websites that were running WordPress. There are some very impressive sites running Drupal these days.
Drupal has some shiny names, like whitehouse.gov.
Oh, just some guy.
Yeah, just some guy
just
in some big
dude.
White House.
He's famous.
In the States. PM.gov.au runs Drupal. Locally, the State Library of Victoria runs Drupal. My tiny little blog that no one reads runs Drupal. Drupal is doesn't have the same level of... you know, adoption as WordPress. Like WordPress is at 18% of the web. Drupal's at 3% of the web. Now that doesn't sound like as impressive a number, but when you think about the billions of websites, that's still a lot of the web when there's so many other web products around. But it's probably fair to say Drupal runs larger, more complex websites than WordPress does. And a lot of people like to get into WordPress versus Drupal kind of fights, which I think is really dumb.
We're not horses for courses, really.
Doing that today. Not a Drupal versus WordPress showdown. That's not what's happening.
See them as stablemates. It's sort of like you don't go, hammer versus screwdriver. You know, it's like, what's the job you're doing? Is it a WordPress kind of job or is it a Drupal kind of job?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting question.
There's quite a bit of overlap if you want there to be some.
There is a huge amount of overlap.
Okay. I'm going to stop. Raina, sell me as a wannabe user. I want to start... a particular website. Tell me what WordPress is good for. So where would you position it in terms of the website market?
The thing is, I'd probably ask you a few more questions like, what do you want to do with it? Who would be looking after it, et cetera, et cetera? And the reason why I'd ask you those sorts of things is because one of the major differences that is about WordPress, and especially the more advanced that WordPress gets, the more like a fully-fledged content management system it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
Drupal is more like a fully-fledged content management system that is slowly creeping more towards a user-friendly blogging sort of platform, maybe. So they're kind of growing together.
Mm.
So if you are a bit of a beginner...
Yep.
What I would probably suggest to you is that you think about WordPress as an opportunity to do that. And I mean, and you would probably be able to answer this question about Joy, for example. Mm-hmm. Not everybody who is a volunteer here is necessarily going to be all that interested in writing their own HTML.
Correct.
And the WordPress interface is very, very friendly. Now, you can make the Drupal interface quite friendly, as we all know, or at least we all know in this room, maybe not.
I think everybody else needs to know that.
Sometimes it creates a little bit more work for you to just sort of put together the bits and pieces of Lego that are required to do
so one of the differences historically, which is going to all change in Drupal 8, but Drupal did not come with what we call a WYSIWYG editor out of the box.
And what does that stand for, Donna?
That stands for what you see is what you get. Basically, it gives you bold and, you know, table buttons.
So like editing in
like
Outlook,
like your word
if
process.
If you can write an email, then you can probably use that.
So it didn't used to come with that stuff out of the box. You could install it. You know, that was... that was easy enough to do. You could add that functionality, but it didn't come with it out of the box. And a lot of people used to laugh at Drupal because of that. So that's really been addressed in Drupal 8, and it's going to come with that in core, which is going to be huge. You know, it's interesting, though, like within the community, there was also some pushback on that because they were actually saying, well, there are a bunch of uses for Drupal where you don't want WYSIWYG editing,
no,
and it actually
don't.
Makes it kind of crap because it, you know, adds things which you don't want. So, you know, I think that battle kind of got won in the general usability. So, you know, Drupal will have WYSIWYG out of the box for Drupal 8. And Drupal 8 is kind of roughly due, maybe likely to come towards the end of this year, the beginning of next year. It's very much in development right now.
We have had a text in 0427JOY949 from our usual producer here, Mark, who has finally woken up from his intercontinental flight, who'd like to point out that SharePoint is good too. Yes, Mark, SharePoint is great.
Mark, SharePoint is not, however, open source.
No, it's not open source.
No, that is true.
And, but if you want to come in, Mark, and be the SharePoint guy, we're happy to discuss
it. CMS. Smackdown.
Yeah, totally.
Smackdown. Sunday.
Okay, focus, ladies. Good.
Sorry.
Would you people get off topic?
So this was always a danger when it was going to be us three in the studio without Mark to keep an eye on us.
Indeed.
That's right. This is what happens.
No, I'm going to take...
He's never going to let us back again, you know.
Indeed. So my personal blog, for example, also runs WordPress. The Joy blog, or the Joy website runs WordPress. And for those listeners out there that have been to the Joy website, we actually run something called WordPress Network or WordPress Multisite.
Yes.
Which means we every program on Joy has its own blog.
That's right. And they're all sort of connected up together, aren't they?
Correct. So I get to manage the entire thing in one go.
And WordPress kind of stole that idea from Drupal because we had that built in
stole
from the start.
It.
Well, I think you'll find
we're not allowed to do the versus thing.
I think you'll find that it actually came out of WordPress.com. And that actually leads me to a big point is that WordPress, one of the key differentiators, I suppose, for the adoption of WordPress is that there are quite a few sites besides WordPress.com, but there are quite a few sites that just host WordPress. And you can go to the site, you can sign up for free or for some money, and boom, they do all the heavy lifting of running that for you.
There's actually a really big WordPress network called EduBlogs. A lot of teachers and schools and stuff are using EduBlogs to, you know, basically create this
Melbourne
kind of education
based, I think
community.
You'll find as well.
Yes.
And Melbourne-based. It's really awesome. And I think this is really one of the magic things about WordPress and the communities that build up around not only WordPress but open source software in general. It's not necessarily just a bunch of, you know, techie tools. It's about building things that bring people together.
Honestly, I think the community aspect of things has actually been... when I had a bit of an opportunity myself to think more about WordPress or Drupal, I've got to say that the WordPress community really was what convinced me in the end to go with WordPress, because the Drupal community was a little bit opaque. Perhaps a little bit off-putting. Maybe
I will find a look. I haven't spent a lot of time. Spent a lot of time in the Drupal community. One of the things that I appreciate about the WordPress community is that it is not just the developer tech people in
that
community.
Right.
We have a lot of bloggers and writers.
Yeah.
I went to WordCamp Melbourne a couple of months ago, and most of my conversations at WordCamp were not with the techie people. It was with the writers
the
and bloggers.
Creators, yeah.
And I had the
really
longest conversation with a novelist.
Interesting point. Yeah. And I met with Jen Milo from the WordPress community. She actually works for Automattic, and I think she's their sort of community manager, kind of wrangler person. And we had a really interesting conversation about gender diversity inside Drupal and WordPress. And in terms of, you know, open source communities, we actually have a lot more women inside our communities than, say, Linux or, you know, the database communities do.
Correct.
But one of the things she said, you know, because there are a lot of women at WordCamp Melbourne. And she said, well, the big difference here is that we've got users in attendance.
Yes.
Is that people who are bloggers, people who are using WordPress, are here and participating and sharing what they know, and they're interested in stuff like SEO in terms of you know, getting more traffic to their sites and doing good content, lots of stuff. Whereas in a Drupal events, it tends to be much more developer centric.
Yeah.
And I think that's a weakness. I think that's a strength for the WordPress community. Other people would disagree with me, and Jen herself, as a developer, was saying, "Look, I wish that I had a bigger, you know, I wish there were more developers here that I you know, that I could, you know, communicate with. And I think this is one of the kind of unexplored tensions in the open source community is our relationship with our users.
Yeah, it is very, it's very technocratic. I've got to say, like, so I actually, and Donna knows this, of course, I actually spoke at Drupal Down Under because I'm not just a WordPress person. Like, I'm a bit of a
I love your byline, which Arena has, you know, I've never met a content management system I didn't like.
Well, although
I've met one or two personally.
I've met a couple that kind of made me sort of look sideways. But this is a true story.
No.
Sorry, Mark. This is a true story though. And I was telling a Drupal guy all about it. Like not you know. And again, this is an individual. This isn't, you know, necessarily representative of the community. But I was telling him all about it. Going, yeah, I'm going to be speaking at this conference. He goes, oh, what are you talking about? I said, our content strategy. He goes, well, that's not really about Drupal, is it? And I'm like, it's not really the point.
Yeah, I think he gets a big black mark against his name, and I actually get really frustrated with that kind of attitude, because
that's the kind of attitude that I think a lot of open source communities really sort of struggle with. It's like, you're just a user. Well, what could you possibly have to do with any of this?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the strengths of the WordPress community.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of response and reaction from their user community. One of the things, for example, in 3.6, there were two big components that were supposed to be in the 3.6 release, which is the new administration interface, the MP6 interface, and the new post format interface.
Yes.
Both of which were removed because the users who were testing it didn't like them and said they didn't improve the usability.
Yep.
So WordPress actually in Automattic pulled them out. And they said, we like them from a technical perspective and we will have them in the product eventually, but we will have them in the product when the users agree to them.
And look, I mean, if you have a use for that sort of thing, then you can always just build it into your themes or a plugin anyway, like as you have been able to do for the last four or five versions anyhow with post formats. Like if you really want to modify the interface, go right ahead and do it. You've got the freedom to do so. But yeah, it's just not part of the core.
It is 17 minutes to one already. You are on TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. You are on TechnoGaze, 16 minutes to one here on Joy 94.9. This is Avi, and I'm joined in the studio by the lovely ladies Raina and Donna. We are talking all things WordPress and Drupal. Now, I wanted to, just before we finish off on these two things, I wanted to get from you guys how, if I'm a user and I want to start my own website, how would I start with WordPress, Raina?
So to start with WordPress, you need to either think about going to a host like WordPress.com, if that's what you want to do.
And then the nice thing about that is they take care of the heavy lifting for you.
They really do. You literally just sign up, you press some buttons, you type in some things, and you get a fully fledged website in a matter of seconds, which is pretty great. And you can pay a little extra for things like a custom domain or custom CSS. So if you want to do your own design stuff, you can do that too. But if you're happy with the free offering, then you can go for your life. Now, the other thing that you can do if you prefer is you can go with a company. Now, I use a company called Dreamhost.
Yep.
They're really great. They actually come with a little thing in their panel where you can just say, I would like to install WordPress here on my domain, and they will do all that for you. Or you can do it yourself if you really want.
No.
Or you can go to an even further extent. So if you are a little bit of a fiddler and a poker, you can install your own database. And Sorry,
I wasn't going to laugh at that, but I failed.
But then you did it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as an example, so the Joy website is hosted on some fairly grunty sort of hosting.
Yes, we are hosted by lovely Joy sponsor Bulletproof.
That's right. Yes. But you would have had to have done a lot of setup on your own. So if you prefer doing that, then you can.
And obviously, that's almost
it's very accessible.
And it's almost a scale thing. If you're just starting putting your journal and your feelings online, then something like a WordPress.com makes sense. And as your site gets bigger, you might then start looking at paid hosting. As your site gets bigger than that, you might start looking at dedicated hosting.
That's
and
right.
Those kinds
One of the great things about WordPress as a platform is that it is so portable.
Yeah.
So, as an example, at my work, which is a certain large university in Melbourne, so we have a blog platform where we allow staff to set up a blog if that's what they want to do, and if they decide that they want to move out to WordPress.com, or if they want to get their own hosting, or maybe they want to come in from their own hosting or whatever, all we have to do is just go to a little panel, press a little button, we get a nice little export thing, and then we can just re-import it again into another platform, which is pretty great. So,
and just on a note as well, if those of you who are looking for WordPress hosting, WPMU.org just did a comparison of the big five WordPress hosters, so that's worth checking out.
Certainly is.
And taking a look.
That's very cool. Yeah. I think that's one of the things that is a real challenge for people who don't have the kind of base knowledge that we take for granted.
Yeah.
Is how do you start? Where do you go? There's a lot of, there are a lot of different rabbit holes to go down to figure out what's the best way of doing this.
Now, one of the nice things, obviously, is that, you know, Raina mentioned that a particular hosting provider, Dreamhost, has a goodies installer.
And yeah,
one
and
of
a few others do.
Yeah, and one of the goodies is WordPress. Another one of their goodies is also Drupal.
Absolutely.
Now, Donna, if I'm a newcomer and I'm evaluating this, is it, what is the entrance scale to Drupal?
Drupal has a few different things. I mean, similar to WordPress.com, there's DrupalGardens.com,
okay,
where you can go and just point and click and start your own Drupal Gardens website. Again, that's free for the base level. And if you want to get your own domain name, you can pay a little extra, do that sort of thing. There's also an Australian company based over in Western Australia called Spoon, who set up PageBuild.net. Mm-hmm. It's not free. I think it's like $30 a month. But again, it's Drupal-based, and you can just go point and click and create your own website that way, which is pretty cool. And there are a bunch of others that do that kind of thing as well. There's also some dedicated Drupal providers who allow you to sort of point and click and just set up a site. Mm. So that option is definitely there. But probably the majority of people running Drupal sites have their own server, have downloaded Drupal and set it up and done the installer themselves and have that slightly higher level of technical expertise.
No, of course, one of the most famous things, if you like, about WordPress is its 5-minute installer. WordPress is renowned for the fact that I think it's about 4 button clicks and WordPress is running. How's Drupal on its installation?
I haven't counted the button clicks, but it's also pretty quick. Basically, once you've got the main package downloaded onto your server and you point a web browser at it, it goes, do you want to install? And you go, yep. What language do you want? You go, choose, whatever. And then it's got a couple of other setup things like, you know, what's your database password, and then you're done. And then you kind of go through and start adding content. It's just there and add content here.
Now,
the thing is the beyond that, and I think this goes the same for WordPress as well, is there's kind of the core Drupal or WordPress, and then there's this whole kind of universe of extensions or modules.
That's right.
That take it, you know, in whatever particular direction you want to go.
Yeah, and this is something that I've been meaning to ask you about. Because WordPress has done quite a lot of work in their product where you can sort of jump onto like an app store sort of style thing where you just sort of say, I'm interested in plugins that do stuff with comments, so you can click through a whole bunch of things and just click OK. Is that something that's going to be improving in Drupal, do you think?
For Drupal core itself, there is no app store, but one of the things which has happened in the Drupal kind of ecosystem is the development of distros.
Mm.
So just like in the Linux world, you've got different distros of Linux in Drupal.
And they're all set up in different ways.
And they're all set up in different
purposes.
Ways.
Yeah.
That's happened and happening in Drupal. So recently I've been playing with a couple, one called Open Atrium and another one called Panoply. And Open Atrium is kind of a kind of intranet-y kind of system. So it's got a bunch of stuff built in. It's got this module called Organic Groups, which allows you to have, you know, distinct little spaces and stuff to do. And Panoply, interestingly, Open Atrium, the new version of Open Atrium, is built on top of Panoply, which is a distro which has taken a lot of effort to be really flexible in terms of layout. So rather than getting your standard, here's your text and here's your kind of sidebar.
Menus on this side, menus on that side.
Yeah, so this lets you kind of have, you know, all kinds of complicated layouts and stuff, and that's really cool. But there's a bunch of them. There's one called Drupal Commerce, which is for, you know, shops. There's one called Drupal Commons, which is kind of for social intranet or, you know, community kind
of
things.
So you've basically got all the plugins and functionality just in a nice big bundle.
Yeah, they're all packaged together. So they've already got, you know, the WYSIWYG stuff is already set up and different kind of variations on it are all sort of there and ready to go.
And I suppose for the on the WordPress side of the fence, the big one in that space are the BuddyPress.
Yeah, things that
stuff.
Are already set up for, you know, communities and stuff like that.
Though WordPress doesn't tend to have, in my experience, the same style of distro building that Drupal does. Drupal's distro building is quite nice because it's not a Drupal plus a plugin. It's Drupal plus a combination of plugins that have been tested to create a style of website.
And it also, it's Drupal and a whole bunch of modules plus a theme plus a whole bunch of what we call views. So it's already set up a bunch of kind of, you know, content templates, not just, you know, the space to put it, but, you know, say you want lists of this and, you know, you want this kind of featured content over here. So it kind of sets up a lot of that stuff in the process.
Yeah, because in WordPress, we would do a lot of that in the theming. So when you say, I want all of the things from such and such category over here, if you don't already have, you know, a setup in your theme that says do that, then you can build on quite easily, but you would generally do it in your theme. Whereas in Drupal, it is more of this view sort of thing where you actually have to go and say, I want these things that match these criteria, and so on.
So we're rapidly running out of time. I cannot believe it's 8 minutes to one here on Techno Gaze. Ladies, before we get onto a couple more there, we have a couple more stories that I do want to get to today. Raina has a particular one that she's quite amused about. but I wanted just to wrap up the lovely WordPress and Drupal discussion. Just a little bit of your history, and I did, to just to sort of, if you like, anthropomorphize. Because I love that word. Your history with each of the products. Like, what brought you, Raina, for example, to WordPress?
I've always been interested from the outset of my career in content management.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is I had a blog and I was using a product which is still around. It's called Movable Type.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Movable Type was the business. It was the absolute bomb and everyone was using it. What happened was is there was a little bit of a kerfuffle around licensing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Movable Type not being true open source in the sense of you can't just take it and run away and then do what you want with it. And I think a lot of us moved away from Movable Type at that time, and WordPress happened to be the one that I jumped on. So it was previously known as B2 or CafeLog.
Yep.
And it's really sort of matured a lot in the last 10 years. And I think it's really sort of, you know, there are a lot of people fighting over it, as it were, when people were coming away from Movable Type. Lots of different products like Expression Engine, Drupal was one of them, Joomla, Mambo.
Yes. Does anybody remember Mambo?
No, shame. I still get queries from people about Joomla. I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that exists.
Do your thing. I'm sure it's great. I just don't know much about it. But WordPress certainly is the one that seems to have fought its way out of the crowd for the blogger crowd anyway.
Yeah.
And Joomla, like WordPress and Drupal, also runs on the same stack. So it's also one of the stable mates.
Donna, your background, how did you get involved with... I mean, you were a member of the board of the Drupal Association, so you're obviously a keen Drupaler.
I am a keen Drupaler. I mean, interestingly, I'm not a developer. I'm kind of almost a site builder, but not quite. I rely on other people to do a lot of that stuff, and I'm more in the kind of user and business sort of analyst side of things, mm-hmm. I guess, of, you know, determining what people's needs are and how Drupal would fit in this. That's where I am now. But, like, I joined Drupal.org 6.5 years ago, and... at the time, I was doing web development, and we kind of had our own PHP-based content management system, which we developed in bits and pieces over the time. And for those of you who've done this, we you know, basically had a server-side include-based solution.
We'll forgive you now.
Yes, but got to the point where, you know, it just wasn't possible to maintain that as a very small business. And so we went looking for an open-source content management system, and we evaluated WordPress, Mambo, Joomla, and Drupal. And at that point in time, Drupal seemed to do what we wanted because we developed a lot of functionality ourselves. We could find modules that did some of that stuff already existing in the Drupal ecosystem 6.5 years ago. It was already there. You could plug it together. And we went, wow, you know, why have we been beating ourselves over our heads trying to do this stuff when, you know...
It was all there all the time.
It was all there all the time. Well, it wasn't there when we started. I mean, things like managing your own, you know, authentication system, you know, that stuff's heavy lifting, but we don't need to do that with something like Drupal.
Raina, where do I find out more about WordPress?
WordPress.org if you want to get a hold of the open source version, or if you want to sign up and try it out for yourself, WordPress.com.
Donna?
Drupal.org to find out about the software and the community, and DrupalGardens.com if you want to just dig in and play.
It is 4 minutes to one. You are on Techno Gaze. We will wrap it up right after this.
Techno Gaze.
It is 2 minutes to one here on Techno Gaze. We have just enough time for Raina's favourite news of the week, Raina.
Oh my goodness. I love how you're turning this up. So it turns out Samsung may or may not actually be cheating on their benchmark tests.
Oh, what?
Well,
what?
True. Well, apparently. So there is a poster on some forums who has been testing out his Samsung Galaxy S4 and finding that somehow the GPU is peaking at 532 megahertz when he benchmarks, but only 480 when he's doing normal stuff. How does that work?
So they started to dig into the code that is running on the S4 and they found some really interesting things.
That it can in fact run that fast, providing that you are running this benchmark software, as in it's looking specifically for the benchmark software and overclocking itself.
But hang on, hasn't benchmarking always been bogus?
But this is actually straight up bogus. This is not like haha nudge wink openly bogus. Okay, this is actually...
This is bogus squared.
This is kind of
bogus
sneaky.
To the power of bogus.
Yes.
So
This is quite frankly doing a dodgy.
This really is very shady indeed. Yeah.
Now on that bombshell,
such as it is,
I want to thank the lovely Raina and Donna for joining me here on Technogaze this afternoon. We're coming up to the news at 1 o'clock with the lovely Matt Thompson. Next up is Cravings with Pete Dillon. From all of us here at Technogaze, have a lovely week.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.